What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Stuff that changed the world.
The mobile phone.
The internet changed the world.
Penicillin, I would have thought.
I would say sanitation.
It changes everything.
Nope, none of those things. Once again, Simon Tierney joins us to talk about the airbag. I'm actually surprised we haven't spoken about the airbag before.
I'm surprised too, Sean. Yeah. Do you have an airbag?
I assume so.
Do you
so.
Own an airbag?
I assume so. I don't know.
You
I've
probably
never,
own many.
I've never been in a crash where an airbag was deployed, so I assume
no. Thank goodness.
Well, thank goodness. You'd but be no, surprised. My car does have the panel things
yeah,
on it. Yeah,
but you'd be surprised how many airbags are in your car.
Oh.
Depending on the year, of course. The newer it is, the more airbags it'll have.
And where do it's they like, have them?
They're like they're like Gillette razors. You know, they just increase the amount
the
of
number.
The number.
They're all over like, do the they place. Have them on the sides?
Oh
and
yeah,
stuff as well?
Yeah. Well, you have side collision, rear collision, frontal collision, everything. I think the car that I drive, I think has about 6 airbags in it.
Crikey!
Yeah. Like I remember when. My parents got a car in the 90s and I remember noticing that it had an airbag, which was very fancy in Ireland for a car to have an airbag in the early 90s. It was only in the early 90s that airbags became kind of standardized in the EU.
Mm.
So it's quite a recent history, much older in America, which I'll get to in a moment.
Yeah.
But in those days, it would have just exclusively have been the driver. Everyone else was sacrificed to the road. Just
yes.
the driver would survive. Now, of course, everyone gets one.
Well, but there were seatbelts. So was there a perception that an airbag could do something a seatbelt couldn't?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a really good question. And it's interesting because the history of the two are quite tied in. And we've discussed the history of the seatbelt on this series before. And the industry's, and indeed the consumer's distrust of seatbelts was repeated with airbags. People thought that they were dangerous. And indeed, they were initially, because you got a massive balloon of rock hard air in your face, until they, you know, with a lot of nuance, they managed to make them safe. But you know, airbags, they can injure you.
Yeah,
They're deployed so quickly. So where did it start, Sean? It all starts in the 1950s in America. Unlike the seatbelt, which was invented here in Europe by Volvo, of course, the airbag was initially the idea of a retired engineer by the name of John Hetrick. 1952, he was in a minor car crash. Nobody died, but he realized that when impact happened, his reaction, his intuition meant that he put his arms up to prevent his daughter coming through the back seat.
Oh.
Of course, at that time, people didn't wear seatbelts in the back or the front of the car. So children would often go through that middle section. And he thought, OK, well, there has to be a way to do this. So he came up with what he described as the safety cushion assembly for automotive vehicles. Still wasn't called an airbag at that stage. And the way it worked is, now, this was never put into manufacture because it was flawed, although it was a brilliant idea. So it was very, very influential. He put a tank of compressed air in the bonnet, and there was a valve that was activated in the case of a sudden impact. Now, how does the car know that it should release this valve? It knew it because there was a spring-loaded weight in the bonnet as well, which would activate the valve and would cause the compressed air to inflate this airbag. Of course, it was too slow. You know, the accident had basically happened by the time the airbag would deploy. And at this time, the 1950s, everyone realized that Hetrick's idea was brilliant, but it was very difficult to know how do we deploy this fast enough that it actually has an effect. People were inventing airbags which were you had to pull a rope and they would deploy. So you kind of basically had to go, right, I'm about to crash, so I'm going to pull this this coil and hope for the best. I mean, that, you know, it's obviously ridiculous in retrospect. But everything changed with a man called Alan Breed, Sean. This was in 1967. He finally developed a sensor that was able to deploy an airbag fast enough. And the way he did this was he used an electromagnetic sensor, which was combined with a tiny chemical microexplosive. And his airbag was able to deploy in 30 milliseconds, right? 30 milliseconds is very, very fast. There's 1,000 milliseconds in 1 second, and his deployed in 30 out of 1,000.
Yeah.
So it's an extraordinarily fast.
Because I suppose also the difficulty must have been having some sort of sensor that knows when it's a crash, and having the right kind of setting on it, if you like, for want of a better phrase, so that it's not going off randomly if you stop suddenly and the car thinks there's a crash.
You're absolutely right. And that really, it leads us on to the amount of testing that was done with these. I mean, this is the 1960s. It wasn't really until the late 80s, early 90s that they became standard. So there's a period there of sort of 20, 25 years where all the car companies, especially in Europe and in America, were doing a huge amount of research using crash test dummies and airbags. Mm. And the two, both of their history is quite interlinked in that period. And what we see happening, Sean, is that the first airbag to be produced commercially was in a General Motors car, actually. It was the Oldsmobile Toronado, which is a classic 1970s American car. And they had an airbag in it as standard from 1973. By 1977, they removed the system out of the car. This is exactly what happened when Ford introduced their seatbelt system in the 1950s. They were the first company in America to introduce seatbelts. A few years later, they took them out. Why? Because consumers didn't want them. Hmm. And the research wasn't there to back up how useful they were. The data wasn't there. However, fatalities were increasing all the time, and the car companies began to realize that, look, the future is going to demand that we have airbags in our cars. Maybe not now, but eventually. So all the car companies in the 70s and 80s, they're all doing enormous amount of laboratory and crash test dummy research on the efficacy of different airbag systems.
Are they also using animals during this period?
Yeah, so in 1991, the New York Times did an expose, which I came across over the weekend, Sean, and they said, quote unquote, about 19,000 dogs, rabbits, pigs, ferrets, rats and mice have been killed during the last decade, so that's 81 to 91, in automobile safety tests performed by General Motors. One car company, 19,000 animals. So the way this happened, and a lot of car companies did this, Sean, is that the crash test dummies weren't as sophisticated as they are now. So they used live animals. They euthanized the animals so that they weren't trying to get out, but they were strapped using seatbelts to the cars, and then they were used as crash test dummies. The smaller the animal, the more it came to represent a child passenger or a woman passenger, or a large animal would represent a male passenger.
Yeah. And I also noticed there was a bit of a back and forth there on Twitter about the actual dummies, whether they were representations of men and women.
Yeah.
Women one looked like a small man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So it was in it was General Motors as well in the 70s who they introduced the world's first dummy, which could be used for crash testing. It was called the Hybrid 3, made of steel, aluminium and rubber. But what's fascinating about it is that for most of the history of crash test dummies, they have been essentially male dummies. The 50th percentile, the average American man, is what the Hybrid 3 was representing. So what was that? In 1976, the average American man, and this dummy, was 5'9" and 12 stone. So this is what was used and is still largely used to this day, not just in an American context, but also in an EU context. As far as I can see, there are no anthropometrically accurate female dummies used in EU auto testing to this day, which is extraordinary. And this has a profound impact on how vulnerable women are in cars compared to men.
And why so? Is it because maybe if you're a bit smaller, the airbag should come out further or something like that?
Yeah, so airbags affect different body sizes and the way we move our bodies in very different ways. Whiplash being a really important example of that. Women and the way an airbag deploys the whiplash can have a different effect on women. So it's really important. And there is a growing movement, about time really, to demand that the European Union changes its auto regulations to make sure that testing is done both on female crash test dummies and male crash test dummies. Because at the moment, we know from studies in America that women are 76%, an incredible figure, more likely to suffer serious injuries while driving a car than men are, and 17% more likely to die in a car crash than men are. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying that's all down to airbag technology and crash test dummies being, you know, biased towards men. But I'm saying that that is having an impact. And this is part of a much wider problem of the world we live in being designed by men for men.
Yeah. That's extraordinary. But it seems surprisingly late then that airbags became common in Europe and in Ireland.
Yeah, it is surprising, Sean. But, you know, like I said before, I think it was around 1979, 1980 that seatbelts became compulsory in this country, just for the driver and the passenger. That is, not for the people in the back. I never wore a seatbelt when I was a child in the back of a car. In fact, I remember my parents' cars didn't even have seatbelts in the back. When you look at it in that way, you know, we kind of take for granted nowadays that cars have these things as standard, but it really wasn't. Like in Europe, the first ever car in Europe to have a seat, an airbag in the passenger seat, the front passenger seat, was it was actually a Porsche, and it was the 944 in 1987. That was the first car that provided an airbag outside of the one that the driver was using. So it is recent technology, but it's hard to imagine us going backwards now.
Yeah. So depending on the age of the car, and I see somebody say, is there an airbag in the back of the front two seats for the passengers in the rear? That depends then on how old your car is.
Yeah. So that information would be in the manual in your glove compartment. But from what I can see is that the newer the car, the more likely there are to be more and more airbags, particularly ones in the back seats. Which would be in the headrests, I imagine, and ones on the side and all the rest. If you're driving like a 1993 Yaris or something, I don't know what how many airbags would be in that. Now, there was a problem in the past, I remember, that people were worried that, God, you know, do airbags expire? Because, you know, so like I've had my car for 22 years. Are the airbags still working? And there's no way to test them. There were concerns about older cars that their airbags might expire over time. So that is a concern for sure. But I have noted that with modern cars, they don't expire. I mean, you know, new cars from the last few years.
I've also wondered that certainly in the front of the car, you know, there's a piece where there's kind of a rectangle where, you know, on the passenger side where it says airbag.
Does that smash you in the face?
Yes,
I was wondering that as well.
Well, there's only one way to find out, but I'm not particularly keen on doing that. And Garrett in Galway says, on the subject of airbags, getting a van, and as it's a commercial, they only had a bag for the driver. It's to do with the cost in keeping the van cheap. It's 400 quid for the passengers, which I paid for as I like most of the lads that work for me. So,
wow, that's very interesting. Yeah.
So the lads that work for Garrett in Galway are, you know, some... Though if there's one chap who works for Garrett, he's always put on the same seat in that van. You might know that's the answer. You might know now why. Simon, thanks a million for coming into us. Simon Tierney, there you are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk.
Moncrief on News Talk.